which was seized by suspected Islamist gunmen this morning. And that does it for our broadcast. For the whole show today, you can go to our website at democracynow.org. The video is there, the audio is there, the podcast, and the transcript of our broadcast. We are hiring a director of development to lead our fundraising efforts. You can find out more at democracynow.org. Democracy Now! Is produced by Mike Burke, Carla Wills, Laura Gottesdiener, Dina Guzder, Amy Littlefield, Nermeen Sheikh, Sam Alkoff, Robbie Karen, Steve Martinez, Hani Massoud, Juan Carlos Davila, Pedro Rodriguez. Mike DiFilippo and Miguel Noguera are engineers. Special thanks to Becca Staley, Julie Crosby, Hugh Grant, David Prude, Ariel Boone, and Vesta Gadars. And to our camera crew, John Randolph, Karen Krugmeadows, Charina Nadura. Our website is democracynow.org. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez. Thanks so much for joining us.
This is WHFR Dearborn. And now it's time for our public affairs show, and we call it the new WHFR Journal. Hello and welcome to another edition of the new WHFR Journal, our own local news show that covers all the events of the last week and talks about things coming up in the near future right here in Dearborn and the surrounding area. My name is Jay Koronek, happy to be your host today, and it is November the 20th, 2015. And yes, we just got a weather forecast this morning. There could be snow, the first snow of the fall season for 2015 tomorrow. Probably won't stick unless it gets very cold and the storm hits us with its best shot. Could be up to 5 inches, they say, but let's not panic, you know. But if you are going to be driving tomorrow, there's already a weather advisory out as distributed by the Dearborn Police Department and others. It is somewhat handy, although maybe a little too scary too frequently, to subscribe through Nixle. That's nixle.com. Let them know it's free. Let them know that you're in the Dearborn area, and you will just get the Dearborn Police Department announcements, and you can have it sent to a mobile phone. Although if it's a long bit of information, then the text message you get on your phone will say check out the web version, the email version. So whatever you want, and of course you can unsubscribe at any time from that, but it's a free service. And boy, for those people who want to keep up on the latest from the Dearborn Police Department, you know, there it is, nixle.com. So last Friday I was saying that, hey, it's Friday the 13th. It's always been a good day for me. Well, of course, it wasn't such a good day for other people, such as people in Paris. And but I'm sure there was people, well, everywhere that weren't having a great day, and I'm sorry for that. I apologize for being a little overbuoyant or optimistic because stuff happens everywhere. But this shouldn't happen because why? Humans caused it. That's right. We did it to ourselves. And I take collective responsibility for that. So all this week on WHFR, since we are a local independent station, we program our music ourselves. We play not the hits, but what we think are equal to or better than what's currently on the radio. So it's always something you wouldn't expect or you've never heard before on our station. This is our public service hour, so we do news. We talk about, as I said, the latest news from this week and talk about events coming up. But in regard to that French thing, in order to make up for my being overly optimistic last Friday, and in fact, I was wondering, because it was Friday the 13th in France, too, when this happened, were those terrorists trying to jump on the unluckiness of Friday the 13th? Because the Templars were slaughtered in France on a Friday the 13th. And that was back in whatever it was, 1200, 1400, somewhere in there. That was one of the first, when in looking back at massacres in history, that was one of the first Friday the 13th that had a lot of people killed. The Templars being a special military religious branch of the Vatican that after its time in the Middle East, fighting those pagans, heathens, whatever, which they weren't, but nonetheless, they amassed an almost remarkably a tremendous amount of money and wealth and power, and were throughout Europe, but an awful lot of them had castles and monasteries and things, churches of their own in France. And so whatever the reasons for that massacre were, whether or not the Vatican actually gave the order through the King of France to kill all those terrible soldiers for God, because maybe they were too powerful and had too much sway and whatever. That's a Friday the 13th anyway. So there is a song, a French song, that I thought I'd like to play. Not a pop song. Our DJs this week have been playing a lot of interesting music by French artists. And even some songs by the heavy metal group that was performing in France, where the main gunshots were fired and the majority of the people died during that evening in France. But anyway, I thought I would feature what's referred to as a French national anthem, because it is La Marseillaise. Okay, the song was written in 1792 by Claude Joseph Rouget de Lille in Strasbourg after the declaration of war by France against Austria. But it was a revolutionary song, an anthem to freedom, a patriotic call to mobilize all the citizens, and an exhortation to fight against tyranny and foreign invasion. The French National Convention adopted it as the Republic's anthem in 1795. It acquired its nickname, which is La Marseillaise, after being sung in Paris by volunteers from Marseille. So it's a song of those from Marseille, La Marseillaise, marching on the capital during the French Revolution. And it's the first example of the European march anthemic style. The anthem's evocative melody and lyrics have led to its widespread use as a song of revolution and its incorporation into many pieces of classical and popular music. So I'm going to play a little bit of one version. There's actually a lot of verses. We don't usually hear them all. I know it's in French, folks, but I will actually explain a couple of verses just in memory of that tragedy. And it certainly evokes a very powerful spirit to continue struggling against forces that want to do us ill in whatever appropriate ways there are, of course. So here is a group called Les Sans Culottes, which means those without shorts on, but they're doing a very patriotic and powerful version here of La Marseillaise.
Aux armes, citoyens, formez vos bataillons. L'étendard sanglant élevé. Entendez-vous dans les campagnes mugir ces féroces soldats? Ils viennent jusque dans vos bras égorger vos fils, vos compagnes. Aux armes, citoyens, formez.
As I said, there's many, many choruses here, and we're going to keep that on in the background, but just we usually just hear the first, the beginning, which is the the verse and then the chorus. So what's being said here? Okay. To arms, citizens, form your battalions. Let's march, let's march. Let an impure blood water our furrows. Water our furrows, they repeat it. And then, arise, children of the fatherland. Well, that's not, it's usually, we think of a reference to those in Germany, but no. That's patriotic there. The day of glory has arrived. Against us, tyranny's blood banner is raised. Blood banners is raised, is repeated. Do you hear in the countryside the roar of those ferocious soldiers? They're coming right into your arms to cut the throats of your sons, your women. And then it goes on, what does this horde of slaves, of traitors, and conspiratorial kings want? For whom are these vile chains, these long-prepared irons? Frenchmen for us? Ah, what outrage! What fury it must arouse. It is us they dare plan to return to the old slavery. So, I'm just bringing an end to that background. It's not real appropriate for even modern-day France, because there's nobody invading, although, unfortunately, a lot of the Republican GOP presidential candidates are trying to say that Muslims are invading. Our shores, the refugees from Syria, can't let them in. They're Muslim. That's so silly. That's really silly. Although they have brought back from the terrible pages of history that one time in the early part of the 20th century, a boat. Well, this was during World War II, so it was in the 1930s, I think, but a boat full of refugees, Jewish refugees from Germany. And again, Hitler didn't want to do anything good for those Jews in Germany, you know. Yes, concentration camp, annihilation of 6 million. Yes, I believe it happened. Anyway, we turned away a boat that originally went to Cuba with, I think, 900 German Jews. And we told the Cubans, who we had power over in those days, don't let them in. Don't let them off the boat. And then the boat went, was called the St. Louis. The St. Louis traveled up the eastern coast trying to stop at each major port. And the U.S. government said, don't let them dock, don't let anybody in. So the boat had to go back to Europe, and out of the 900 German Jews, the final tally was that 250 of them were rounded up and killed in the concentration camps by Hitler. That was not a very friendly move, but, you know, oh, German Jews, if Hitler is against them, if Hitler says, this was the argument of some crazy Americans in the 1930s, if Hitler says those Jews are bad people, and Henry Ford was one of them, by the way. That's right. The original Henry Ford was anti-Semitic. That's right. Yep. Then we shouldn't let him in our country, because who knows what those German Jews will do in America. Oh, my gosh. Yeah. Dark day for America. And of course, the Statue of Liberty, who gave that to us? Who gave that to us? The French did. Yeah, so we do want to help them however we can. We have our sympathies and shoulder-to-shoulder solidarité and so on. But how do we respond? Again, the song itself is very powerful. I just saw the version, the short version. It was part of the movie Casablanca from 1943. Humphrey Bogart and Ingrid Bergman and so on in it. That was in... Bogart's character was called Rick in Rick's Cafe. The Germans were occupying the country and the city, and they came in and into his cafe and started singing one of their national anthems, or the national anthem, I don't know what. And they were, of course, outnumbered by the people from Algeria in the club there, and from people from Casablanca. And so the people from Casablanca started singing La Marseillaise, and gradually, again, since there were more of them, drowned out the Germans. And the Germans didn't like that, and they closed down the cafe and so on. But nobody got shot right then, anyway, in that situation. But it was a very powerful moment in the movie, which is a real tearjerker, but a very patriotic movie in many ways. Even though it was low budget, and Warner Brothers never expected it was going to be a great patriotic movie. In any event, I'm saying that song doesn't have much application to France today. In fact, a few years ago, the wife of the president of France in those days, and I can't remember her husband or her name, but she was head of a committee that were going to change the words. So it wouldn't be talking about kill all these people that are invading, which would have not just been the politically correct thing to do, but the only appropriate thing to do. I mean, even our Battle Hymn of the Republic national anthem is not really about that anymore, is it? I mean, you know, we're not fighting ourselves or fighting the British in the War of 1812 or anything like that at this point. Not really appropriate, but it's a great patriotic cry, get people to salute, do things en masse that might be good for the country. In any event, here's a commentary from Paul Krugman in the New York Times, which I thought was the most appropriate response to that situation. And it's entitled, and this is from New York Times last Monday, November 16th, Fearing Fear Itself is the title. Like millions of people, I've been obsessively following the news from Paris, putting aside other things to focus on the horror. It's a natural human reaction. But let's be clear, it's also the reaction the terrorists want. And that's something not everyone seems to understand. He says, take Jeb Bush's declaration that this is an organized attempt to destroy Western civilization, quote unquote. Paul Krugman says, no, it isn't. It's an attempt to sow panic, which isn't at all the same thing. And remarks like that just help the jihadist cause. Think about what France is and what it represents. It has its problems, but it's a robust democracy with a deep well of popular legitimacy. Its defense budget is small compared with ours, but it still retains a powerful military and has the resources to make that military much stronger if it chooses, because it's not as deeply in debt as we are right now. I added that part myself. France is not going to be conquered by ISIS, says Paul Krugman. Not now, not ever. Destroy Western civilization? Not a chance. So what was Friday's attack about? Killing random people in restaurants and at concerts is a strategy that reflects its perpetrator's fundamental weakness. It isn't going to establish a caliphate in Paris. What it can do, though, is inspire fear, which is why we call it terrorism, and shouldn't dignify it with the name of war. The point is not to minimize the horror. It is instead to emphasize that the biggest danger terrorism poses to our society comes not from the direct harm inflicted, but from the wrong-headed responses it can inspire. Think 9/11. Do I have to give you details on that, folks? That's my insert there. And it's crucial to realize that there are multiple ways the response can go wrong. I'm inserting again, think 9/11 and our response to that. Paul Krugman continues, it would certainly be a very bad thing if France or other democracies responded to terrorism with appeasement. If, for example, the French were to withdraw from the international effort against ISIS in the vain hope that jihadists would leave them alone. A much bigger risk is that the targets of terrorism will try to achieve perfect security by eliminating every conceivable threat, a response that inevitably makes things worse, because it's a big, complicated world, and even superpowers can't set everything right. So what can we say about how to respond to terrorism? Before the atrocities in Paris, the West's general response involved a mix of policing, precaution, and military action. All involved difficult trade-offs, surveillance versus privacy, protection versus freedom of movement, denying terrorists safe havens versus the cost and dangers of waging war abroad. And it's always obvious that sometimes a terrorist attack would slip through. Paris may have changed that calculus, especially when it comes to Europe's handling of refugees. and there will have to be a post-mortem on why such an elaborate plot wasn't spotted. But do you remember all the pronouncements that 9/11 would change everything? Well, it didn't, and neither will this atrocity. Again, the goal of terrorists is to inspire terror, because that's all they're capable of. And the most important thing our societies can do in response is to refuse to give in to fear. That's the opinion of Paul Krugman, New York Times, Monday, November 16th. And there are some things that have changed, of course, since then. And if you've been following the national news, I don't have to update it here on our local show. This does apply to us because right here in this area and in Dearborn, well, we're Americans. We're citizens of the world, too. But there were some losses, as talked about in the Press and Guide from this last Wednesday. Three Dearborn residents were among those killed in the bombings. In Beirut. And it's not Paris, right? But nonetheless, so the story is right there. And, you know, it's tragic wherever these things happen and whoever caused them. You know, I can't use the words that were used by John Oliver on HBO because we're on a broadcast radio station licensed to Henry Ford College, by the way. Thank you very much. Nonetheless, there was a candlelight service held Monday at the University of Michigan, Dearborn. And there's a couple of pictures from that in the paper from this last Wednesday. So all of this does come back around to us. We can't act fearfully. We can't be kept from doing positive things for ourselves and our country. But we shouldn't go off in a crazy way, and I think destroy our society by taking away freedoms that we're so proud of and that I think the jihadists are really jealous of, if it comes down to it. But even if they don't like us, you know, they don't have to kill us. So we will defend ourselves. But I do think that the French, President Hollande, have gone a little bit overboard in terms of sending the police everywhere in France and rousting everybody they think. And it's causing some fear and panic among the French people themselves because of that crackdown. But politically, you know, President of France was thought to not be an easy reelect there because he was having, that affair with a woman other than his wife, which is the only way to do affairs, I guess, that he was caught riding a motor scooter to her apartment and back. Somebody took pictures of that. The French president, a little motor scooter. He thought it was in disguise because he had a full face helmet, but he still was wearing a suit and everything, you know. Anyway, you know, politically, he has to appear extremely strong right now because there'll be a re-election in the next year or two, and people want to remember that he did something, just like they challenged President Obama at the G20 summit this week, the news reporters. Aren't you going to do something? And we're doing something. We're doing all kinds of things. It's a complex world. If you've got a better specific idea, let us know, and we'll talk about it. That is a rational, sane human being, a smart human being. I'm giving credit to our current president. By the way, all opinions on the show are not necessarily those of anyone here at Henry Ford College, not faculty, staff, students, or administrators, but we do thank them for allowing us to state our points of view. Obviously, there's many points of view on this, and we need to talk about it. We need to hear them, okay? Can't just listen to people who are trying to get your vote next year. Because they're trying to get your vote next year. And they'll say almost anything these days to make you believe they are strong and powerful when, in fact, you know, words are cheap. When you're not in a place to do anything, words are very cheap. But when you are in that place, you've got to be able to do the right thing, even if it seems not to be a single bold response. because that may be the wrong thing to do. Yep. Okay. It's about 22 minutes after the hour here. New WHFR Journal, WHFR.FM, the station making waves. And we're going over and briefly looking at the papers from this week. Although we always try to scoop the papers by talking about things somewhat in advance of events. And I'm looking at the Dearborn Times-Herald from this last Wednesday. And I don't see anything other than there's an editorial there. Okay, I see this. Guest editorial, usually always, from the Times-Herald in Port Huron. And they actually write their own opinions. And it's the usual story we see almost every year. There's over 19,000 regulations in the state of Michigan and 900 sets of rules spread across about 35,000 pages of bureaucratic paperwork. And there's an agency called the Office of Regulatory Reinvention. And Governor Snyder created that in 2011 to clean out the state's rule book, okay, and get rid of things that are out of date, obsolete, pointless, unnecessary, redundant, and whatever. So they've gotten 2,000 rules out of there. But they've got 17,000 to go. Okay, so that doesn't look like much of a change. And by the way, they say these rules, these 19,000 they started with, are only from the executive branch. That means from the governor's office. The legislative branch is looking at cleaning up its books, too. And there's plenty of outdated laws and rules that are there. And it's always funny to, or somewhat humorous anyway, it's tragic, but there's some of them can be mentioned. For example, an 1889 tax law that's been obsolete for more than half a century. There's a law governing the use of lime on farm fields, which is made obsolete by more current regulations for agricultural fertilizer. And of course, careful regulation of fertilizer is essential to control the record-setting algae blooms poisoning Lake Erie. So there are some good laws there, but you don't want to have conflicts, contradictions, and obsolete laws there. And there's just too many little ones that just we should get rid of. So good luck trying to do that, legislature. I'm sure you've got more than 19,000 to go through yourself. We should try to ask George Duraney, our representative to Lansing from this area, next time we see him on this show to talk about that. This is his last term in office. He's term limited. So we'll see what he decides to do next year, actually, at the beginning of 2017. There'll be a new representative that has to run unless they get rid of course, term limits, which I and a few tens of thousands of people in the state of Michigan know is the wrong way to go, certainly in terms of elected representatives and Congress. Term limits kicks the bums out automatically after 6 years, but it's 6 years of you folks voting those bums to stay in office. So term limits is an insult to all voters. And although not that many people are voters, I assume the people that do vote actually the ones that think about it and try to vote for the best person rather than just voting for the person who's already incumbent, right? As our former mayor Michael Guido always said very strongly, we already have term limits. It's called elections. So, but I don't suspect any of the people who are in Congress right now, because they'd be all blamed if they voted that term limits out, that they're doing it for self-interest, because they want to be able to stay in office longer. But as Gary Warrenchuk, when he was our representative years ago, he's now, I know, in the Wayne County Commission, and he's a Democrat, but he's a Republican then. And anyway, after 6 years, he told us on the show very clearly, I'm just getting a hang of it now. I'm just learning how to be a good representative. 6 years. Maybe he was a slow learner. But the point is, you have to know how to play the system. You have to have some power, some authority within the system, or you're a victim of the political parties telling you what to do because you don't know what else to do, and the lobbyists telling you what to do because you don't know what else to do. You don't have a clue on what your power or significance is and how to write a law or whatever. And so yes, we need career politicians. We need good ones. And of course, we get the good ones by electing the good ones, and we keep electing the good ones. Now, term limits don't apply everywhere, like not to federal government employees, except the president of the United States is term limited, of course. But here in Michigan, the legislature is term limited. Yep. Okay. Just taking a look here at last Sunday's. Oops, we're going backwards in time. Not sure there's anything here that I circled. Nope. So we're turning to news stories. Oh, yeah. That's why they call it news. All right. Well, I mentioned the legislature. Here's that segue into another story from the Sierra Club, Michigan chapter of the Sierra Club. Very active group, of course, in favor of a good environment for all of us. Clean air, clean water, clean food. And, of course, saving energy, which means we're damaging the environment less, is a good idea. And this is their opinion about legislature's actions for this year. As the expiration date for Michigan's renewable energy standard looms at the end of 2015, the House Energy Committee has passed a package of legislation that would undermine our state's momentum towards a clean energy future. The bills in the House, it's Bill 4297 and 4298, will now move to the full House for action shortly after House members return after their deer hunting season and Thanksgiving break. Amendments to the bills, which were introduced by Energy Committee Chair Eric Nesbitt, Republican, were negotiated during the last 2 weeks before the break, resulting in some modest improvements over the original bills. However, instead of setting standards, the negotiators agreed to an unenforceable goal. That's goal in quotes. Like, hey, here's the goal, but no penalty if you don't make it. So that unenforceable goal is for every electric utility to implement combined energy efficiency and renewable power generation equivalent to 30% of their capacity. And here's a quote from Mike Berkowitz, Sierra Club's legislative director. He says, Michigan's 2008 Renewable Energy and Energy Optimization Law worked because the law had clear requirements for each utility to achieve by 2015, and 100% of Michigan's utilities have complied. The bills that will be debated and voted on next month, that is, it might still be, after Thanksgiving, it'll be December, are a major disappointment and threaten to stall the state's progress at a critical time. And of course, they're suggesting that whether you're a Green Sierra Club member or not, you might want to send a message to your legislators if you see them over the holidays somewhere, or call and leave a message for them, or an email to their office in Lansing. When they come back, they'll see it, calling for the substantial and enforceable clean energy standards, not unenforceable goals. Okay. Great nonprofit organization, although difficult to give money to them because when they're lobbying, and they do lobby, they're a lobbyist group, that's not tax-deductible contribution. There is something called Sierra Club Foundation, which is a nonprofit side, and you can get a tax credit for a gift that way. Since our two political parties can't do something for the environment, who are you going to call? Ghostbusters. No, I mean, you're going to either call a third party, like the Green Party, who are not in office yet. Why? Because you didn't vote for them, folks. If you voted for them, they'd be in office. Yes, they do run every election. Yes, there's candidates there who are Green Party, and they are clearly in favor of the environment and clean energy. You could vote for them. But if you don't want to vote for the Green Party, then and you know Democrats and Republicans are not going to take a strong stand to get clean air and clean water. They didn't do much for our roads. Ah, but that's the next issue, I guess, did they? Oh, they passed that roads bill. Yeah, well, I think I already told you about that, but I'll remind you if you didn't listen to the last show. So you need to support a nonprofit organization that is doing lobbying, too. And support means if you want to pay for their lobbying efforts, there's no tax credit, but might be money well spent to keep their lobbyists telling the story, telling the truth about what you want to the Dems and Republicans. And of course, there's a threat that if you don't like those Dems and Republicans, you're not going to vote for them next time around. Okay? That's the Sierra Club of Michigan, Michigan Chapter, Sierra Club, national organization. Okay. So there's a story in the News Herald, which I thought was great because it could have been an opinion piece, but it's actually a news story written by Dave Herndon and Frank DeFrank. That's his name, Frank DeFrank, from just yesterday, November 19th, and I found it on the newsherald.com website since I don't get the downriver paper. Well, here's the story. Help is on the way for Michigan's motorists who have coped with the state's deteriorating roads for years. It just won't be as soon as most would like. When Governor Rick Snyder signed a series of road funding bills last week, he assured local road agencies will receive a windfall of cash over the next 6 years to finance long overdue road and bridge construction projects. Representative Patrick Somerville, Republican New Boston, recently spoke about the new package. While some of the funding initiatives will go into effect beginning the first of the year, the full force of funding for roads is still a ways off. Some of those new funding platforms include a 40% across-the-board raise to vehicle registrations. That's going to be phased in. Okay, but the plan calls for an additional $30 fee also. In addition to the 40% increase in what you're paying to register your car each year. Is that the title or the license fee? Whatever. It's you know, that the money you've got to pay if you have a car. And I think it's all together there. Okay, that's what it is. The license fee is that registration fee each year. But if you have a hybrid car, because they don't hurt the roads and the environment as much, you got to pay $30 more. Because shame on you for not using as much gas. Because gas tax is one way they're going to get some money in by raising them a little bit. And if you own an electric car, well, shame on you. You got to pay $100 more to register that. Because you don't use any gas. But you use those roads. Yeah, with your very lightweight cars, though. Okay. I have problems with this. So when? The state won't begin to dole out the additional funds that they're collecting until 2017, says the story. That leaves neither road repair agencies nor drivers in any better shape than they've been for years, and we're going to suffer with bad roads for another, well, if you count this year, 2 years. The money won't be coming in that they can spend to fix roads until 2017. Of course, it's not enough money, as I've reminded you. Craig Bryson, who's spokesman for the Road Commission for Oakland County, said, "We're appreciative that the legislature did something." Yeah, but they didn't do enough, I'm adding here. Representative Bill Lavoie, Democrat from Monroe, said he voted against most of the 9 bills in the road funding package for various reasons. Those reasons were mostly because the package was very partisan and left a lot to be desired by the Democrats. He says, "We've been waiting since at least 2011 for a road funding package," which is when Governor Snyder first said, "We need to fix the roads. We need $1.2 billion extra on top of what we're already collecting for 10 years. Now, this year, professional estimates are we need $1.7 billion for the next 10 years to even get even with just repairing them as they start falling apart." Right. But if we have to wait 2 more years, we'll need like $2.3 billion a year. And this is only collecting $1.2 extra. what Snyder originally asked for in 2011, which is not enough because the roads are in worse shape. The bridges are in worse shape now than they were in 2011. So this won't be enough money. We'll be short $1.5 billion again. And so the roads will continue to get worse and worse and worse, not better and better. And they're going to get totally worse in the next 2 years. And then they'll get a little bit better, but it won't catch up. We won't catch up with the repairs needed. And it'll get worse and worse. So can we please get somebody in the legislature that knows what they're doing, that knows the science of the roads, the cost of road repair, and what's needed? It is very frustrating. So there's an editorial here from Craig Ferrand from the News Herald. He's only in the Downriver paper these days. And I'm not going to read all of it, but you can probably figure out his title from the title of it. The last thing we're getting from Lansing is true leadership. And he talks about what should leadership be. And he says our legislature doesn't have it. And, of course, he's been blaming Rick Snyder, too, in this article, in this opinion. He says, from the outset, Mr. Snyder ran as an outsider, as someone not beholden to the powers of politics, someone who could lead the state into fiscal bliss thanks to his personal history as a bean counter. But that was then. Today, it's alarmingly clear Mr. Snyder's outsider status has been his undoing, that he has been consistently behind the eight ball when dealing with the machinations of politics. Likewise, his acumen with number crunching has been lost in the nuance of governance. You know, the last road package that came out of the legislature a month ago also was going to cut $600 million from the general budget to help pay for that $1.2 million, which hasn't been decided what's going to get cut where. But I didn't know we had a budget that could allow cuts anywhere. And he said he would veto it if that was passed. Well, this time it has the same hit, $600 million worth of cuts, and he signed it. And it doesn't even take effect for 2 years, and it won't even be enough money. And where will that $600 million be cut from? Education? Job retraining? Help to the people that are poor and need assistance? Well, he should have... In my opinion, he should have vetoed that too. From everything he said before, from when he was elected all the way up through last month, he should have vetoed the current bill. But you don't want to, approaching 2016, have anybody say, oh, you didn't vote to fix the roads. And they can say, we did pass these bills to fix the roads. And you won't even notice the 40% increase in your car registration until after we're out of office. Isn't that sweet? Yep. Because that's the way they timed it. Why do you think they delayed for 2 years? Because they don't want you to connect the raise in pay, raise in gas tax, the raise in registration fees, or even the cuts in the general budget to them. They don't want to get blamed for it. Because a lot of them, a third of them, will be term limited and out of office next fall. All right. Sorry, I can't remember. It's a terrible thing. Is Snyder term limited as governor? Or can he run again? But approaching November 2016, we're only a year away and everybody's talking about it, at least for president anyway, they didn't want anybody to remember that they weren't in favor of and didn't vote for fixing the roads. They have, they can say proudly. But we don't see the extra cost until after they're out of office or until they get reelected for what they did. We'll see the roads continuing to get worse and worse, though. So, anyway, always, if you get a chance, even if you don't subscribe to the Voice of Downriver, the News Herald, you can go to their website and read Craig Ferrand pretty much every week. And he's got a very intelligent opinion. Although some people think he's a liberal. Ooh. But it's another point of view than Governor Snyder's. And you've got to look at both of them and see what they say that you agree with and figure out what the differences are and then make your own decision. Who's right? I'm certainly not telling you which is right. I'm giving you the alternative ideas. That's what our show is about. Local news and alternative views. keep telling you that. Okay. Got a lot of events coming up, obviously approaching a big holiday, and so I'm going to have a big, I've got a pile of statements here from a number of people about what's coming up and what you should be considering to do with your time. Oh, by the way, in the Metro Times this week, too, Jack Lessenberry, and there's a liberal for you, a good one, I think, intelligent one, The Road, Snyder's Betrayal, more of the same. What I said last week, Jack wrote it up. He was listening, I guess. Thank you, Jack. Okay. Oops. Yep. Another holiday thing. Sorting through stories here that we've read and haven't read. You can hear the pages turning on the air. The only news show where that's true. That's why you listen to the new WHFR Journal. I know. That's why you listen. Yep. Okay. Speaking of the legislature, were we? Yes, we were. Remember, I was mentioning them. State Representative George Durrani mentioned him too, Democrat Dearborn. He actually had a press release that came out Tuesday in response to the question of Syrian refugees being allowed in Michigan. You know, Snyder said, well, we should sort of put a hold on that. Can we see if, they're dangerous or whatever, or if they're Christian? He didn't say that, but certain other Republican governors are saying crazy things. Remember that the governors have no say in terms of refugees coming into this country, either an emergency permission or through our regular system of immigration and visitation. Okay, governors and states have no say. So all those stupid governors, and they were all Republicans, about 30 of them, because there's a lot of Republican governors, all said, we don't want any Syrian refugees. For one reason or another. Okay. Here's his statement. It is with heavy heart, George Durrani's statement. It is with a heavy heart that I offer my most sincere condolences to not only the people of Paris, but to the victims of the recent terrorist attacks throughout the world, including those in Beirut. We must strongly condemn those who have carried out these barbaric actions. These horrific occurrences have certainly impacted each and every one of us, and I firmly believe that during these times of sorrow, we must stand together and support one another in unity. Our nation is a nation of immigrants, and often a beacon of hope for those facing terrorizing situations on a daily basis. And he speaks about himself here. As the grandson of an immigrant family from Syria, I certainly appreciate the opportunities that the state and country have provided. We absolutely must continue rigorous screening and security checks for refugees, but flat-out denying entrance goes against so much of what our country was founded on. I have lived in the diverse community of Dearborn my entire life, and I can say with complete confidence that our differences contribute to our successes. Ultimately, this is a decision that falls to federal immigration policy, and the fact that state leaders are stirring up this conversation is rather concerning to me. We need to be focused on coming together and building a stronger state that provides opportunities for all who wish to pursue the values of our great nation. I remember shooting a documentary. I was a cinematographer on a video documentary that was shown on Detroit television. A couple decades ago, but nonetheless, I was very proud of that work, and we spent a week or two visiting Jewish communities in the Detroit area, because under several groups, the Jewish communities have set up, I don't know what you're going to call them, centers, help centers for Jews throughout the world who need to get to the United States because their homeland is trying to kill them. Sound familiar? World War II? Yeah. And so the various Jewish organizations we visited with some of the leaders, and we visited with some of the recent immigrants who actually came in those days mostly from Russia. They had to go to Russia because Russia, 20 years ago, was persecuting and prosecuting Jewish people For what reason? I don't know. This is not World War II we're talking about. This is late 70s, early 80s, okay? And some of these people had been able to cross the border into some of the Middle Eastern countries or even get to Italy, but they wanted to come to America for all the reasons, for all the principles we've always stood for. And so these organizations locally, Jewish organizations, were organized, had counselors, advisors, lawyers, and when these people got here, they were placing them in homes, getting them jobs. So my thought is, and I know we have a lot of very strong Muslim organizations in this area especially, are they organized to help with that nationwide? Because they need to be. I think that would be a logical way to bring people in, but give them the proper advice and counseling, and then, of course, allow them to be constructive, positive American citizens. You know, get training in English if they need it, and education, and so on. It's important that that go on, whichever organization wants to take it on. But I don't think the federal government, I'm sure that they can't just all of a sudden give a bunch of tickets to refugees to fly to Detroit or to fly to Atlanta or wherever and just not have help when they get there. So there's got to be a plan on how to bring them in, take care of them, get them into housing, get food. And now we're not talking about a concentration camp or a camp with tents or something, folks. We're talking about real housing and a real chance to start over again, education if needed, training if needed, and get them in the positive workforce. Dearborn is a real success story for thousands of immigrants who have come here in the last 30 years, who have become responsible American citizens and built up their community with great businesses and services. So anyway, that was the opinion with my own comments from George Duraney, our state representative from this last Tuesday. Okay, well, about 9 minutes to go on Highway 61, the best in the blues from 2 to 6 p.m. today. Kitty Love is going to be sitting in again for Joanne Kraczynska, and she may even allow me a Zydeco hour again today. And that would be fun for me anyway. But stay tuned for the best in the blues, Highway 61 from 2 to 6 p.m. on WHFR coming up in about 10 minutes. Here's that event list. Oh, it's out of chronological order. Oh, my goodness. Well, things are happening right away, of course. Let's see here. Tonight at Joe's Top Dog in Dearborn, Michigan Avenue in East Dearborn, a block east of Schaefer, Johnny Trudell, trumpet, is going to be the soloist, featured with the Rich Michaels Trio. And that goes from 7 to 10, but I know a lot of people will get there about 6:30, actually. So that's great jazz right here in Dearborn. No cover charge on that, by the way. Miracle on 34th Street is tonight and tomorrow at 8 p.m. at the Redford Theater, nonprofit Redford Theater. Enjoy their 1928 Barton Theater organ, starting 30 minutes before each show. You can buy tickets online at redfordtheater.com. By the way, there's a Saturday matinee tomorrow at 2 p.m. And, of course, the two 8 p.m. shows. Ticket price is amazing. And I can say these and recommend these things because it's a nonprofit organization. $5 each. Great classic, Miracle on 34th Street. Yes, it might be on TV, but take the whole family. Natalie Wood, Edmund Gwenn, great story. John Payne, great story. Great classic film. That's the Redford Theater tonight and tomorrow night, and also tomorrow at 2 o'clock matinee. get to Wyandotte, Trinity Lutheran Church, tomorrow, Saturday, November 21st at 7 p.m. There's going to be the Metro Shores Chorale is going to sing songs for the season, featuring the choral works of a lot of great classical composers. And our own WHFR news director, John Conroy, is in the chorale himself. I think they'll let him out of the chorale, though, for maybe next week. So, okay, bad joke. Okay. The annual pottery, the fourth annual pottery boutique here at Henry Ford College is going on right now. It started yesterday, but it's continuing through tomorrow, 10 a.m. to 8 p.m. It's in the Sisson Gallery in the Grant U. McKenzie Fine Arts Center building. That's Building F for Fine Arts, right here on the main campus. Most buildings here at the campus that have a big letter now, it doesn't stand for anything except the letter. But in this case, Building F is the Fine Arts building, and in their art gallery will be a great showcase of the artistic talents of current HFC ceramic students, alumni, and selected guest artists. And it's an event where you can buy things. So functional ware, artistic pieces, jewelry, decorative home goods, unique to the region. And to support the event is, by the way, open to the public. Admission and parking are free too. But to support the artists and the students, great event, great pricing. In addition to looking for gifts there, okay, I had a green card here somewhere. Here it is. Holiday Boutique is now open starting today, daily, today through December 18th, at the Padziski Art Gallery in the Dearborn Community Arts Council, the Dearborn Community Arts Facility, the Dearborn Performing, the Ford Community and Performing Arts Building. That's what it's called officially, okay? And in there's an art gallery that I'm always mispronouncing the name of. Sorry, Padziuski. It says they have extended hours and all kinds of things, glass art, jewelry, pottery, scarves, cards, ornaments, paintings, photography, textile art, ... which means all kinds of stuff. And unique creations and original art over there too. Now that's just starting today and going to December 18th, whereas the Pottery Boutique here at Henry Ford College is open all day today and ends tomorrow at 8 p.m. both days. Don't know the hours for the Holiday Boutique in the center, but just go over there. It's probably pretty much the whole day. All right. See what else is happening. Ah, of course, at the center, mentioning the center, Festival of Trees returns starting this Sunday. And it's only there for 1 week, and it's closed on Thanksgiving. But it's a great showcase of beautifully decorated trees, wreaths, and even gingerbread houses will be on display to inspire visitors in their holiday decorating. And you can also purchase their pre-decorated pieces. 50 professionally decorated trees and all kinds of things. Also, trains will be set up from Glancy Trains Modular Railroad Club, and a cool city made out of Legos. Legos are always cool because they don't have heat. That's right. Okay. Because if they did, they would melt. No, just kidding. Okay. And so that's a great event, and it's for a great cause of Children's Hospital somewhere. Here it is, Children's Hospital of Michigan Foundation. And there is a charge for that, but a great cause. And it starts this Sunday at 2 p.m. opening. But on other days, it's 10 to 7 pretty much, or 10 to 8 towards next week. But again, it's closed on Thanksgiving. But tickets, can't see the regular, isn't it interesting? Can't find the regular admission price, but I think it's $5 or something like that just to get in. Okay. What else is happening of all these great events coming up here? Pottery Boutique, okay. Global Fridays tonight, an Armenian folk duo. Is going to be performing there. It is the unfortunate remembrance of the, well, I'd call it ethnic cleansing, and, of course, genocide, depending on your point of view, that happened in the Middle East. I think it was, 1948? In any event, Arab American National Museum has two great folk artists performing tonight at 8 p.m., I believe. Double check with Arab American National Museum. It's just $15 general admission. Yeah, concerts begin at 8 p.m. Okay. And something I knew about for years and never mentioned on the show, and shame on me, because it was all, I guess because it was all the way out in Garden City, Michigan. But that's pretty close to us, right? They're our neighbors. Of course they are. Their 54th annual Downtown Garden City Santaland Parade will be happening on the 28th. Okay, Saturday. It's Saturday, the 28th of November. That's a week from tomorrow. And it starts at 10 in the morning. And for more information, you can go to their website, which is santaland.com. Yes, they have their own website. Oops, I'm sorry, santalandparade.com. And they have a Facebook page too, but it's more typing Garden City Santaland Parade. But their website is santalandparade.com. Also, you can go to the Garden City website itself for information about parade routes and so on. I think it's down Middle Belt Road from some place to some other place. And it starts at 10 in the morning. It's also going to be on the website. You can watch it a live video from one website or the other, maybe from santaland.com. Who knows? santalandparade.com. So check that out. That'd be a great thing to do with the family. Yes, there's a big parade downtown Detroit on Thanksgiving Day itself. But, 54th annual Garden City Santaland Parade. Wow, that's a big deal. So why don't you check that out if you haven't looked into that, something different to do with the family. Okay, it's 2 o'clock, and by golly, it's time for Highway 61. Thank you for listening to the new WHFR Journal. We will be back here again next Friday, which is Buy Nothing Day. Okay, we'll also talk at that time about the campaign to only shop starting Saturday the 28th at small businesses. It's Small Business Shopping Day. And that continues for about a week. There's an interesting promotion going on that all began with American Express. That's right, the credit card company and bank several years ago. But now even local Dearborn businesses are benefiting from that. And we'll tell you the whole story next Friday before it happens. But take care. Be careful out there, especially if there's snow tomorrow. But, these times of years, a lot of people who are driving cars who haven't driven in quite a while and or haven't driven certain roads. You know, it's like a new experience because they're hunting for an address or a new shop to shop in. So be very careful. This is WHFR Dearborn. And up next, Highway 61 with Kitty Love.